Good morning. Thank you very much for coming out. And this morning, when we lost an hour of sleep, people were good enough to nonetheless dedicate time to come to Shiurim. So that's great. And thank you, Rav Rothman, perfect timing, for hosting us this morning. This morning, actually, is a shiur about Korech, and it's a Korech shiur. Korech, of course, is the sandwich at the Seder, the matzah and the maror, but this is also going to be a Korech shiur in the sense that it's going to be a sandwich, the first half of which will, I hope, be something of an intellectual challenge. We'll be looking at the history of the sandwich and the Rambam's somewhat unique view about the nature of the sandwich itself. What's supposed to go into the sandwich? Is it required? Is it optional? And then the second half will be something of a spiritual challenge. We'll look at two views expressed by Rav Kook to explain lessons we can learn from the Korech sandwich. So we begin with the intellectual piece of it. And this is about, again, the history and the function of the sandwich. First, I have to ask a question. Does anyone at their Seder ever feel satisfied with their Korech sandwich? Does it ever come out the way it's supposed to? We got one who says yes. Everybody else says no. What's your secret? I can't do the sandwich because my matzah crumbles, right? Inevitably, I use romaine lettuce for maror, but even when I was growing up and we used horseradish, it wasn't any better. I would have the matzah and I'd have the maror and I'd get them together and think, all right, I'm in good shape, and then I would lean, and then it would all fall apart, literally.
You said you're supposed to be satisfied with korach. I thought that was dafi kohen.
Right, dafi kohen is supposed to be al hasova. That's when you're really satisfied. Nonetheless, it was a very frustrating experience until I got a little older, and I understood the way that matzah is supposed to look. If you take a look at source number one, we're starting a little bit behind the eight ball on time, but nonetheless, I'd like to go through the source. We learn that matzah does not actually need to be paper thin. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, the sages taught, one may not bake thick bread on Pesach, according to Beit Shammai. You're not allowed to make thick bread. Beit Hillel permits it. So how thick is thick bread? Rav Huna said, up to one tefach. A tefach is a hand breadth. Right, which we assume Rav Moshe Feinstein said is 3.6 inches. Others have different estimates, but they're roughly around there. So you're not allowed to make matzah that's more than 3.6 inches thick.
Pretty thick.
Yeah, that is pretty thick. I'm in Canada, so I'll transfer that into centimeters. It's still pretty thick. You're talking about something like 8 or 9 centimeters thick. For your matzah. So he says, no thicker than that. And he says, that's what they used for the lechem apanim, the bread you had every week in the Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Yosef challenged and said, wait a minute, that was permitted for the Beis HaMikdash. You could have bread that thick, and you wouldn't be concerned that there might be some flour in it that doesn't get baked, and might then remain as raw flour and subsequently turn into chametz. But he says, that's not true in general. He says, the kohanim who are preparing the bread are very energetic. They're careful. And the kohanim work the bread. The Gemara describes how they work it hundreds of times, working the dough. And therefore, they're going to get to all of the flour, and there they have a fire that's with dry wood that was collected months before, and therefore it's a hotter fire, and it's in a metal oven. So Biosi says, you're not allowed to make matzah that thick on Pesach. The fact that the lechem apanim, the showbread in the Beis HaMikdash, could be that thick is because of unique conditions there. He says, you can't go that thick with your matzah in general. Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba then said, I asked my mentor Rav privately, or some said that Rav Yirmiyah Bar Abba quoted Rav as saying, that he asked Rebbe, what is thick bread? Large quantities of bread. That's the point. And why is it called thick bread? Because it involves a great deal of kneading. In other words, the concern is not really that you're not allowed to make thick bread. Rather, the concern is you're not allowed to make a lot of bread because it's going to involve extra work on Pesach. To sum up, Yehuda, if you could just take that bag out, maybe that would help. I think someone left it. Maybe that would work. That might work. Thank you. The point out of this source, I'm rushing this source a little bit because it's not the essence of the shear, is that you're not supposed to make the bread too thick, but there is a lot of leeway there. A lot that you could have a bread that's relatively thick compared to the matzah that we eat. And in fact, the Torah says, based on this Gemara, that you are allowed to make thick matzah on Pesach. That's the rule that the Torah mentions. The Beis Yosef asks, why doesn't the Torah mention 3.6 inches as his threshold? And he rules in the Shulchan Aruch, this is in fact the Code of Jewish Law, says the maximum width of your matzah, I should say the maximum thickness of your matzah, It is indeed a tefach, 3.6 inches. So when they're having korech, they're not doing it with paper-thin matzah. They're doing it with a thick bread, something a lot more like a pita. In fact, if you go online to a website called softmatzah.com, you will actually find that they market this kind of matzah. Jews in Sephardic communities eat it. Soft matzah is, and I'm not marketing this and I don't get a profit off of it and I'm not even recommending it, but just to let you know, softmatza.com. And indeed in Sephardic communities and even some Ashkenazim actually use this. I'm told that it comes frozen and you have to defrost it shortly before the meal or it'll go bad. That's what they were working with. Sorry? Yeah, a lot more like a laffa, exactly. Okay, so that's just worth knowing. In terms of the secret of korech, now you know why our korech doesn't work. Our korech doesn't work because our matzah was never meant to be that thin. But we have some questions. Take a look, please, at source number 2, and this is where we really get into this. The Rambam in his Mishneh Torah describes the way they did korech in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and his comments should surprise us. He says, after you make the bracha on matzah, he says, V'achar kach, korech matzah u'moror ke'echad. One would then bind together matzah and maror as one, and dip it in charoset, and recite a bracha, brachat Hashem, al achilat matzot u'morim, on the mitzvah of eating, matzah and maror. That's what the Rambam says would happen in the Beis HaMikdash. You would take matzah, you would take maror, you'd bind it together, and then make a bracha of matzot umrorim, and you would then eat it. And he says, if you eat matzah and maror individually, then you recite individual brachot. What is the problem here within this view of the Rambam? What contrasts with what we imagine went on in the time of the Beis HaMikdash? Two major contrasts. Number one, yeah. Okay. Sure. When we sit down for Korech at our Seder, we say a paragraph, Zecher LeMikdash KeHillel, to remember the Beis HaMikdash like Hillel, right? Kein Asa Hillel Bizman SheBeis HaMikdash Haya Kayam. This is what Hillel did when the Beis HaMikdash was still around. Haya Korech Pesach Matzah U'Maror VaOchlen BeYachad. He would bind together the carbon Pesach Matzah and Maror and eat them together. LeKayem MaShenemar, to fulfill the pasuk Al Matzos U'Morim YoChluhu, that you shall eat it, the carbon Pesach with Matzah and Maror. That's what we say in our Haggadah. It's not what this says, right? Why not?
There's no Korban Pesach.
There's no Korban Pesach. The Rambam says that the sandwich you're making in the Beis HaMikdash does not actually involve Korban Pesach. It's just matzah and maror. That's number one. Number two, Hillel makes it sound like this is the way you fulfill the mitzvah. The Rambam makes it sound like it's optional. Right? The Rambam says, if you make a sandwich, then you have them together and you say bracha v'amatzot u'morim. But if you eat matzah and maror individually, then you say individual brachot. It's a choice. I can choose. What is this? Why is this an optional sandwich, according to the Rambam at any rate? And why is Korban Pesach not there within the sandwich? So we need to go through some basic sources in order to understand this. Take a look, please, at source number 3, and a debate in the Gemara and Pesachim. I sum up the views in the debate right below it. My translation. They said regarding Hillel that he would bunch them. Them, we presume, is matzah and maror, but we don't actually know whether that includes the Korban Pesach as well. They said regarding Hillel that he would bunch them and eat them. As it is written, they shall eat it, Korban Pesach, on matzah and maror. So far, so good? Hillel would bunch everything together and eat them. Rabbi Yochanan said, Hillel's colleagues disagreed with him. Hillel doesn't have the dominant view necessarily. As we've learned, I might think that one bunches them together and eats them as Hillel did. No, it is written in the Torah, they shall eat it, the Korban Pesach, on matzah and maror, even each one independently. Now, here's an odd thing. In that view that was just expressed that disagrees with Hillel, is the sandwich permitted? Is the sandwich prohibited? Is the sandwich optional? What is it? Optional? What makes you think it's optional? Because it says even, right, afilu in the Hebrew. On the other hand, the way that Rabbi Yochanan introduces it, it's that Hillel's colleagues disagreed with him, which makes it sound like you're not supposed to do the sandwich at all. Hillel says, make a sandwich, and his colleagues disagree and say, no, I have a mitzvah of eating matzah. I needed to make my own separate bracha on matzah and eat matzah. That's my maisa achila, that's my act of eating. I have to have a separate act of eating maror. And I'm not supposed to sandwich it. It's an odd thing. So that Rav Ashi challenges it. Rav Ashi challenged, if so, that the Chachamim, the sages, did not believe in using a sandwich at all, what does even mean? Because the word even doesn't fit. The word even is odd in this case. Rav Ashi said this was the lesson. I might think one would not fulfill his obligation unless he would bunch them and eat them as Hillel did. In other words, I might think a sandwich is a requirement. Therefore it is written, they shall eat it on matzah and maror, even each one independently. So we have three different views. I sum them up right below the Gemara. The Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yochanan, say no sandwich. You're not supposed to have a sandwich. The Chachamim, according to Rav Ashi, say the sandwich is optional. And then Hillel, either way, says you have to eat the sandwich. There are actually three different views. And the Gemara concludes, we don't have a tradition that the halacha is like Hillel or like the Chachamim, the sages. And so one recites the bracha on matzah and eats it. One recites the bracha on maror and eats it. And then one eats matzah and lettuce together. Lettuce is the Gemara's statement there for maror. The term in the Gemara is chasa. Without a bracha, a memorial to the Beis HaMikdash, like Hillel. Right? Zeichel HaMikdash keHillel. So the Gemara's answer is, we try to satisfy everybody. That's the Gemara's conclusion. We want to make everybody happy. There is matzah, there is maror, and there is a sandwich, which in fact is what we do at our Seder. Right? We follow that conclusion of the Gemara. So that's what we have in the Gemara. We have three different views. Sandwich required, sandwich optional, and sandwich outlawed. When the Rambam describes what we do, take a look at source number 4 at the bottom of the page. The Rambam describes our period before the third Beis HaMikdash, and he says, you have matzah separately with charoset, you have maror separately with charoset, and then, one then binds together matzah and maror and dips it in charoset and eats it without a bracha, right? That's what we do. As a commemoration of the Beis HaMikdash, look at the Hebrew, Zecher LaMikdash. What's missing in the Rambam? Hillel. The Rambam knocks out Hillel. So now I have three questions, right? I have three questions about the Rambam. Question number 1 was before. He made the sandwich optional in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Question number 2 was he left out the Karban Pesach from the sandwich. And question number 3 is that when he describes what we do, he says it's to remember the Beis HaMikdash, but he dumps Hillel. We lost Hillel. So how do we understand this? So Rav Soloveitchik offered a very interesting explanation, which we'll use to wrap the first half of our sandwich here. He says, the Rambam views matzah as having two separate mitzvos. If you flip the page, sources 5 and 6, the Rambam says that there is one mitzvah, which is, eat the Karban Pesach on Pesach night with matzah and maror. That's what he has as one mitzvah, right? Mitzvah 56 is that Hashem instructed us to eat the Pesach lamb on the night of the 15th of Nisan with the recorded conditions, that it should be roasted, eaten all in one place, and eaten with matzah and maror, and he quotes you the Pasuk. Then, the Rambam separately says, I have a separate mitzvah, mitzvah 158, instructs me to eat matzah on the night of the 15th of Nisan, whether there is a Karban Pesach or not. Two separate mitzvahs, matzah with Karban Pesach, and matzah as an individual consumption. That's the way the Rambam views it. The idea that matzah exists as a separate mitzvah is also seen in a Gemara in source number 7. I'm not going to go through it now for reasons of time, but you can see it there. So the Rambam agrees that there is a mitzvah of eating matzah with the Karban Pesach. But here is the Rav's Chiddush, his novelty here. He says, the mitzvah is, eat matzah when you have a Karban Pesach. Not eat matzah in the same masa achila, in the same act of eating the Karban Pesach. The framing of it in Mitzvah 56, source number 5, is that when you have a Karban Pesach, you should also have matzah. But not that they have to be in a sandwich at all. The Rambam, in other words, is siding with the view of the Chachamim, as explained by Rav Ashi, that we saw in that Gemara in source number 3, to say that the sandwich is optional. It really just has to be at the same meal. And that's why his sandwich doesn't have the Karban Pesach in it, because it doesn't have to have the Karban Pesach in it. And that's why he says it's optional, because in fact, it is optional. And that's why he doesn't associate our sandwich with Hillel at all.
What's the word al?
Because he's not following him. Sorry?
What's the word al? How do you interpret the word al?
Right. He'll take the word al as being with, as it often is, in fact, in the Chumash. Right? It doesn't have to necessarily mean on at all. So the that's the way the Rambam will frame it. And so he doesn't associate our sandwich with Hillel at all. That's not why we're eating the sandwich. It's not because of Hillel. Well, I have one question left then. If the Rambam really believes the sandwich is optional and nothing more than that, then why does he have us eat the sandwich today? Right? Why are we doing a sandwich at all at our Seder? If it's truly optional, so don't make it a special part of the Seder. Korech, let there be a minhag. Some people like to do that. Why in the world is it a key part of our Seder? So Soloveitchik explained that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Karban Pesach was the anchor for your meal, as the Pasuk itself indicates. Right? It says the Karban Pesach is the main thing with matzah and maror. Once you lose the Karban Pesach, you've lost the anchor for your meal. And therefore, anything else add to the meal, in order for it to be considered eaten together as a unit, really has to be in the same ma'aseh achila, has to be in the same act of eating. And therefore, with the loss of the Karban Pesach, I actually need to eat the matzah and the maror together. And so he says, you can say the same paragraph we always say to introduce the korech, zecher lemikdash and all of that, but insert a comma. Zecher lemikdash. We're doing this to remember the Beis HaMikdash when you had a meal that had matzah and maror together. Kehillel, we're making a sandwich like the one that Hillel made. You follow? Zecher lemikdash, to remember the mikdash. We are going to have a sandwich which is kehillel, which is like Hillel's sandwich, not because of Hillel, but we happen to be imitating what it was that Hillel did. Okay.
Why is that a mitzvah?
It's not. And therefore there's no bracha, and he will say it's not a mitzvah at all. That's correct. If anything, maybe it's a zecher lemikdash and some element of that. I had one other piece for the technical part of this shiur, but I'm going to wait with it till the end to see if we have enough time. I'll tell you what the question is, and we'll come back to it at the end if there's enough time left. The question is, if you go back and take a look at the pasuk that you say at your Seder, in that zecher lemikdash paragraph, right? It ends, we remember what Hillel did in the Beis HaMikdash to fulfill the pasuk that says, that you shall eat it, the Karban Pesach, on matzah and maror. Take a look quickly at sources 8 and 9, and you'll see the problem. Source number 8 comes from the Torah's mitzvah of having a Seder. And it says, V'achluas habasar balayla hazeh, you shall eat the meat on this night. Tzli'esh, roasted on a fire. Umatzos, with matzah. Al merorim yochlu, with matzah, with maror you shall eat it. Or upon maror, taking it literally, you shall eat it. That's one pasuk. And then source number nine is from Pesach Sheni. In the second year in the desert, when they complain to Moshe and they say, hey, we're tamei, we weren't able to eat from the Karban Pesach, we missed out, we don't want to miss out, and Moshe gives them the instructions for the makeup Karban Pesach, and there he tells them how to eat it, and he says, al matzos umrorim yochluhu, they shall eat it on matzah and maror. What's the problem? The pasuk that we quote in our Seder, when we say korech, is the pasuk of Pesach Sheni. Yeah. No. It's explicit. When we sit there at our Seder, and we talk about Korech, and we say, we're going to eat this to remember what was done in the Beis HaMikdash and all that, to fulfill the pasuk that says, Amatzos umrorim yochlu, that's the wrong pasuk. That's not the pasuk for Pesach Rishon, that's the pasuk for Pesach Sheni. So, we're going to come back to that at the end if there's time. If not, I'm going to leave you hanging on this very critical question. But I wanted to make sure to get to this spiritual challenge piece of this shir, not just the intellectual challenge. And so that brings us... All right, thank you. We'll see. I don't want to push everybody else off, but we'll see.
I'm sorry, I'm trouble. He's
a little bit. Got it. Okay, so then I really can go. All right, good. So we'll come back to it at the end, and we'll have time, God willing. Okay. I wanted to get to Rav Kook's explanations of Korech. Rav Kook has two different explanations for Korech, and they're fascinating. The first explanation that Rav Kook gives for Korech is in his discussion about Korech itself. And he describes Korech as the unity of the Jews' different types of service. It's a fascinating read, what Rav Kook does with it. He says, Maror represents slavery. Right? And I think that's actually fairly straightforward. We're familiar with that. Ra'ar al-Shamiru ha-Mitzvah Mishayev Oseinu. The Egyptians embittered the lives of our ancestors. It's an experience of suffering. It's an experience of humiliation, as experienced by generations of Jews in Mitzrayim in Egypt. Matzah, on the other hand, represents freedom. It represents chayrus. It's the Jew celebrating with the Korban Pesach when he's about to leave Egypt. It's the march out of Mitzrayim, the matzah on their shoulders. Yes, it's true that matzah also represents the lechem oni, the oppression of Mitzrayim. Nonetheless, we've cooked for this purpose at any rate, looks at it as the bread of geula, the bread of redemption. And so Rav Kook says, the human being exists in an odd dichotomy, in the sense that we have to be in control of ourselves. Right? We have various urges, desires, things we're looking to do that we're not supposed to act upon or that we're supposed to divert into a different direction. And for that, we need control of ourselves. We need to be kings. We have to be, to use the Hebrew, mishabed ourselves. We have to bind ourselves to the Torah, to what we know we're supposed to do. That requires self-esteem. That requires self-respect. It requires the ability to keep ourselves under control. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, simultaneously, we have to be bound to Hashem and to have a degree of humility. To be able to say, even though I want to do X, I'm not going to do it because Hashem says otherwise. And for that, you have to really, even despite the self-respect, despite the self-esteem, or working with it, you have to be willing to accept that there's somebody above you. There's a melech above you. And so Rav Kook suggests that duality is seen in the matzah and the maror. The maror represents our servility, and the matzah represents our malchut, our control. And in Korach, we mark the need for both of those elements by creating a sandwich that actually unites them. If you take a look in the bottom of your sheets, the unity of matzah and maror, freedom and servitude. This is an excerpt that I translated from Rav Kook's Haggadah. I actually found out yesterday, someone told me that they have Rav Kook's Haggadah in English, which would have saved me quite a bit of time, because Rav Kook, for anyone who's actually read him in the Hebrew, you know, is quite a challenging read, let alone translation. But now I know that it's actually available in English. So this translation is a little awkward, but it's mine. We must understand these two forces, that of servitude and that of freedom, not as separate forces which operate independently, each with its own role, but as two joined, complementary forces. The overall goal, our self-perfection is what he's talking about, will be realized only with the knowledge and recognition that these two forces, abdus and chayrus, slavery and freedom, are not contradictory, but are joined in creating the world's ultimate freedom, the honor and the powerful desirability of which is not revealed unless it is crowned by exalted servitude. Servitude before the King of Glory, which is also the ultimate freedom. You need both, he says. Therefore, the perfect form of freedom comes when it is bound together with servitude, such that a person will find within himself the total control which is suitable for a truly free person, who reigns as well upon the greatest of forces, which is the force of freedom itself. It's a beautiful idea that he sees there, trumped only perhaps by his second explanation. He doesn't do a second explanation in comments on Korach. He does it in comments on Maggid, and it requires a little bit of background. There's a part in the Maggid at which people tend to fall asleep a little bit, or they tend to start to rush because there have been a lot of questions at the Seder and they're running short on time. And that is when up pops Rav Elazar ben Azariah with a discussion about whether you say Yetzias Mitzrayim at night or not. Right? He says, Lo zachisi, I never merit, I can never win the argument. I said you're supposed to mention leaving Mitzrayim at night, and no one ever listened to me until Ben Zoma came along, and he taught Leman Tizkor Yom Tzeislam Eretz Yitzrayim Kol Yimei Chayecha, that you should remember leaving Mitzrayim all the days of your life, not only during the days, but all the days includes the nighttime. This debate is a very practical debate, by the way. We don't think about it that way at the Seder, but it actually is. It determines what's included in Shema. The reason we have a third paragraph of Shema, the Vayomer paragraph, is so that we will mention in the Shema that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. If Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Ben Zoma lose, then when you say Shema at night, it'll end after Vahaya im Shamava. You'll say Kimeh Shemaim al-Aretz and then go on. That whole paragraph is only there because they win. the debate, and they say you're supposed to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim, you're supposed to mention the departure from Egypt at night. But Rav Kook asked, what in the world is this debate really about? Whether you mention it at night, don't mention it at night, what's really at the core of this debate? And he said it's about the philosophical meaning behind day and night. He said, daytime is your goal. Daytime is when you accomplish that which you want to accomplish, whether it's work, whether it's school. He says, daytime is when you actually go about your activities. Nighttime, on the other hand, is preparation. You rest at night in order to be able to work during the day. Yes, this is a generalization. Yes, there are people who work at night. Yes, the Gemara praises people who learn Torah at night. All true. Nonetheless, he says, night is preparation for the day. So there are two types of living, he says. There is life which is preparatory to achieving a goal, life which is the means, and then there is life in which you are actually accomplishing the goal. That's the end. And those are two different types of living. And he says, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the departure from Egypt, plays both roles. It does both. It is a goal in and of itself. Right? Yetzias Mitzrayim is a goal. It informs us of Hashem's power. It inspires the Jews to serve Him and to accept the Torah at Har Sinai. It's our geula. It's our redemption. Right? That's one type. That's one aspect of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Leaving Egypt is a goal. But on the other hand, it's also preparation. When Hashem first appears to Moshe at the Snat, the burning bush, Moshe asks Hashem, what is your name? The Jews are going to ask me, what is the name of this God? What should I tell them? And Hashem says to Moshe, what? Ehyeh? I will be? Asher ehyeh, that which I will be. That's Hashem's statement to Moshe. Says the Medrash, Hashem is informing Moshe, I will be there for you in this experience, in this galus, in this suffering, and I will be with you in the future when you suffer again. And Moshe turns to Hashem and says, that's way too much. They've just experienced centuries of slavery. You need to tell them that it's happening again in the future? Don't do that. And so Hashem says, okay, ehyeh shalachani aleichem, just say, I will be, meaning I'll be with you here. That's the one who came. But the idea that's being expressed there is that Hashem being with us in taking us out of Egypt is preparation for future redemption. It's preparation for geula that's going to happen in the future. It sets the tone, it creates the model for future geula. That's the key. And so, Yetzias Mitzrayim, departing from Egypt, plays both roles. It is goal, and it is preparation. Our mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of telling the story of leaving Egypt, also plays both roles. It's a goal, in the sense that, that night, sitting there going through all the different actions of the Seder, reading the Maggid to explain what's going on, that's meant to bring us to gratitude for coming out of Egypt, and a real feeling that we can embrace Hashem, a feeling of true emunah, of true belief. But it's also preparation for the ultimate redemption, for the ultimate geula. And Rav Kook has a long discussion on this based on the Zohar, where he talks about geula coming from Sipur, telling the story, making us ready to live the life that will earn ultimate geula, ultimate redemption. So that telling the story is also a day element, it's a goal, and it's a night element, it's a means to an end. And then he brings it to Korech as well. And he says, this is represented in the matzah and the maror. The matzah is the goal. It's the redemption. The maror is the suffering that we had to experience in order to be able to get there. You have both elements there. And in the korech, you combine the two. It has the resonance of geula, of redemption itself in the matzah, as well as the preparation for future geula that's embodied in the maror. And the two together make the korech sandwich. So that's Rav Kook's second idea. His first idea is that it's the unity of the Jews, different types of service, the control that comes with the matzah and the subservience that comes with the maror. And his second idea is that it's the unity of the means and the end. Leaving Egypt is itself an end, and it's also a means. And good. Well, now we have time to go back to the point that we didn't finish before, and the question of the pasuk from Pesach Sheni. What in the world are we doing quoting the wrong pasuk? Again, to refresh your memory, if you take a look at sources 8 and 9, the source number 8 is the source for eating the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror at Pesach Rishon. And then source number 9 is the pasuk from Pesach Sheni. But when we sit there at the Seder, we quote the wrong pasuk. We quote the Pesach Sheni pasuk. Why is that so? And therefore, we mentioned Pesach Sheni. We're equally unqualified for Pesach Sheni. But hold on to that idea, because I think you're going where I went towards one of the answers that I want to go to, and I don't want to go there yet. But thank you. Yes. Rav Yashiv offers a very interesting answer, which is problematic. He points to source number 10, the Gemara in Megillah. They're dealing there with the problem of the Ma'amados. There were shifts of Jews who would act as representatives of the Jewish people every week to daven for the success of the Korbanos of that week, of the offerings in the Beis HaMikdash. Every week they would daven that the Korbanos should be accepted to Hashem, and they would do a Kriyas HaTorah. They would read from the Torah. They'd read sections from Bereishis. And the problem they ran into was that there was a section in the Chumash that was 5 psukim long, and they wanted to break it into 2 aliyot. But the rule is an aliyah has to have 3 psukim. So what do you do? So we come up with 2 different answers. The one answer is Rav's answer there in the Gemara. Rav said you skip, meaning the first Ola, the first person called to the Torah, reads 3 psukim. And then the second one skips back a sentence and does 3, 4, 5. So it's 1, 2, 3, and then 3, 4, 5. Whereas Shmuel suggests read 2.5. He says it isn't a requirement of 3 psukim for an aliyah, it's a requirement of more than 2. So therefore, I have 2.5 for the first and 2.5 for the second. And that'll satisfy it. So the Gemara wants to know, why doesn't Rav like that idea of the 2.5? What's his objection? And the answer is, Kol psuka de lo paske Moshe anan lo paskin onle. If you have a pasuk in the Torah that's not split in the addition that we have going all the way back, we don't split it. We don't feel comfortable splitting a pasuk. So, and this is something that you see by, I think it's Minhag Chabad, I'm not sure if others do it as well, but when you make Kiddush Friday night, so most people start with Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker, Yom HaShishi, but there are those who start from the beginning of the Pasuk. Vayara Lokimus Kol Asher Asav, Yinei Tov Me'od, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker, Yom HaShishi. And the reason is because they don't want to quote only half of a Pasuk. That's the idea. Same with people who don't want to start with Al-Kain Beirach, at the Kiddush on Shabbos morning, because Al Kain Beirach is also the middle of a pasuk. We actually do it in the standard Ashkenazi nusach on Shabbos morning after Kel Adon. In Lakel Asher Shabbos, we say Mizmor Shirli on Shabbos Tovlodos Lashem, and don't say the rest of the pasuk. In any case, the general principle is you don't split a pasuk. That's the idea. So Rabbi Yashiv says, look back at these 2 psukim, please, source number 8 and source number 9. He says, if you were to use the pasuk from Pesach Rishon, you would have to start it with Umatzos al Marorim Yochluhu. Because the first half of it says Karban Pesach. And we're not eating that in our sandwich. You see? You see the problem? Do you see what I'm saying? The first half of the pasuk would have to be dropped. So he says, that doesn't work. Therefore, we take the second pasuk, which we also split. We start with Al Matzos Umorim Yochluhu, but it's at the Esnachta. For those who lain, it's at the comma in the sentence. And therefore, you're not really splitting a sentence, you're breaking it at a logical break point. That's Rav Yashiv's answer. We use the wrong pasuk because it breaks cleaner. The problem with that answer is that the Gemara itself says you're not allowed to split a pasuk even at the Esnachta. It's source number 11. It's a Gemara in Brachos. A longer discussion than we're going to have right now. But the Gemara there explicitly says, it suggests splitting a pasuk at an Esnachta, and it says we don't do that. So that makes Rav Eliyashiv's answer a little bit difficult. So what is the answer? So the Netziv has a separate answer. The Netziv's answer in his Meshiv Davar, is that if you look at the 2 psukim once again, source number 8 and source number 9, the pasuk of Pesach Sheni clearly shows that the Korban Pesach is eaten with matzah and maror, that matzah and maror are secondary, and Korban Pesach is primary. Whereas if you look at the pasuk from Pesach Rishon, it's Korban Pesach with matzah, right? The two are on the same level. We want the second one in order to show that the Karban Pesach is really the primary one. That's the Netziv's approach. But my favorite answer is the one from the Belzer Rebbe, which takes us back to Dr. Kirshen's comment. The Belzer Rebbe pointed out in his Haggadah that the reason we do this is to express hope for Pesach Sheni. To say, we've hit the Seder night, we did everything we could do. We went through our Seder, well, first we cleaned out all the chametz, right? We wanted to bring the Karban Pesach, but that wasn't an option. We did everything we could do to get to this point. Kadesh, Urchas, Karpas, Yachas, we went through the entire Magid. We sat down, we ate the matzah and the maror. We're having the korech to remember this sandwich. And now, we turn to Hashem and say, it's up to you. At least, bring Mashiach between now and the 14th of Iyar, and we'll be able to bring Pesach Sheni. It's a tefillah. We're asking Hashem, at least let us bring the Pesach Sheni. The truth of the matter is that the Yerushalmi in Pesachim says that if a community, if the entire community is not eligible for Pesach Rishon for the first one, then they don't bring Pesach Sheni. They don't bring the second one. Nonetheless, there is the view of Rabbi Yehuda who says that you would. So we at least can hang our hats on Rabbi Yehuda, so to speak, and say, we're actually saying, Hashem, please at least bring us the Pesach Sheni. Yes? Yeah, go ahead.
So at Hillel Seder,
yeah.
What did they say was the reason for the Korah?
Right, so at Hillel Seder, this is, I'm about to do a summary, so I'll fit that in. Number one, we talked about why our Korah sandwiches don't work, and explained that the history of matzah was classically, going back to the Gemara and even up to the Shulchan Aruch, you're having a thicker matzah than the one that we eat. Those who don't eat gebrochts, by the way, that originates with that concern. You had a thicker matzah, there was a much greater concern for flour that hadn't been baked properly. But your matzah would have been much more like a lafa type of a matzah, and therefore your sandwich would have worked a lot better. That's number one. Number two, we brought the Rambam and showed that the Rambam says the sandwich in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was optional. Number two, that he omitted the Karban Pesach from the sandwich. We went through the Gemara and saw the different views. There's a view that the Karban Pesach there's a view that they always ate with a sandwich. That was Hillel's view. So that in Hillel's view, he would say, he's in the Beis HaMikdash. So Hillel says, we're eating this in order to fulfill the mitzvah. That's how he believes we're supposed to fulfill the mitzvah. Whereas the Chachamim have two different possibilities, either that the sandwich is optional, or that the sandwich is actually not allowed, that it's actually illegal. And the Rambam is following the view that the sandwich is optional, that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash it was optional, I should say, because by eating it at the same meal with the Korban Pesach, you were already fulfilling your mitzvah. It didn't have to have the Korban Pesach in it at all, hence his omission of the Korban Pesach from it. Nowadays, he would agree that it's obligatory because you don't have the Korban Pesach as the anchor for the meal anymore. But the Rambam does not believe that, in fact, it is like Hillel. It is a memorial to the Beis HaMikdash. It is done the way Hillel did it, but we're not actually paskining like Hillel. And we're quoting the pasuk of Pesach Sheni for one out of the three reasons that we mentioned, we can split the pasuk there, because it shows that the Karban Pesach is primary, or because it's a tefillah, it's a prayer for our ultimate geula. And then the piece from Rav Kook, that the matzah and the maror either represent freedom and servitude, both of which are forces that complement each other within ourselves, or they represent realized redemption, the geula we have achieved, as well as preparation for future redemption. So we should fulfill all of this, and God willing, merit to celebrate Pesach Sheni in Yerushalayim. Or Pesach Rishon, it's still early enough. We can still do it. I don't want to give up. Yes?
Two questions. First of all, if the whole connection that Matzah Maror has with Korban Pesach, so on the other days of Pesach, you don't have the Korban Pesach, where do you have the chiyuv of Matzah? That's the first question. Secondly,
say that again. I'm sorry.
Okay. If the whole connection, the whole mitzvah, is really eating the Korban Pesach with the matzahs and the maror.
Yeah.
So when you don't have the Korban Pesach,
right,
either today or the other days of Pesach, where's the chiyuv of matzah?
Right. So if you take a look at source number 6, the Rambam has a separate mitzvah from the pasuk that says Ba'erev Tochlu Matzos, that there is a separate mitzvah of eat matzah, whether as he writes, Yiyasham Keves HaPesach Olo Yiyah, whether there is Pesach there or not, it's a completely separate mitzvah.
for deraisa.
Yes, as a deraisa.
And what about the parshas Pinchas where you have this, it just mentions shivshavim tachu matzos completely independent of korban pesach.
Right, because parshas Pinchas doesn't discuss the korban pesach at all. It's discussing the korbanos of the yom tov. Remember that korban pesach is technically a pre-pesach mitzvah.
Okay, so why would you think that then you have to have the korban pesach and matzah, or the matzah is not the da, is subordinate to the korban pesach?
Right, so there's a machlokas between what appears to be, to put it glibly, the gra and the rest of the world. Meaning, the Vilna Gaon says that there actually is a mitzvah of eat matzah all through Pesach like that.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas everybody else seems to say, if you're going to have bread, it's going to be matzah the rest of Pesach. The only time there's a mitzvah of eat matzah is Pesach, that is at the Seder. So that would tie into this as well.
So who changed the Haggadah from Hillel's Haggadah?
Well, Hillel doesn't have the Haggadah as we have it in any case.
What did Hillel have at the time of his Seder?
Right. So, he'll have Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, telling the story of leaving Mitzrayim. He has some version of the Mishnah that we know is around then.
When did the Haggadah that we have?
Oh, wow. That's a really great shear, and that requires its own serious discussion. We have much of the Haggadah in existence already in the times of the Gemara,
right,
in somewhat altered form. There are different manuscripts of what the Manishtana questions were, how many questions there were, and the like. Right. So that, is it finalized? I think finalized in the period of the Gaonim, as we suggested
here. The Sephardi version or the Ashkenazi?
Yes. The Rambam has his edition of the Haggadah in the Mishneh Torah, and it doesn't match ours entirely. But basically, it's modeled on what appears in the Gemara, and the generations right after that, it's when it's mostly finalized. But yeah, there's more to say on that.